We recorded a very special podcast. Actually, it consists of three parts. And this is part one with David Curtis and Kali Wisson. David Curtis lives in England, so he called in. And that's why the audio might sound a little bit different than ours with Kali. And Kali actually met David Curtis, and he painted with him. And David was nice enough to do this this podcast with us. And I'm just super excited to have both of these great artists on this podcast. So I want to make sure that you tune in also to the other ones that we will be releasing, the other parts. And I just want to just kind of jump right in with David Curtis and Kali Wisson. By the way, thank you for taking the call. I always enjoyed your work, and now I get to talk to you. And Kali told me about that you guys met up. So that
yeah. Well, it did. We had a fabulous time up in North Yorkshire there. And we were all saying before Kali turned up, we always extol the joy of his bright sunlit paintings.
Yep.
And then he's got to come here, and it's a flat light, flat grey northeast Yorkshire light.
Yeah.
How's he going to deal with this?
Yeah.
But he did it with great aplomb, and it was freezing cold, middle of summer, and just not what we would have expected.
Yeah.
He said to me, "Just feel my hands, they're absolutely freezing." But we went on the beach. It was very cold, very grey. As I say, June the 8th, I think it was. And he produced this fabulous painting. And he tucked any bit of light that was possible. He'd drawn it out into his painting. Beautiful, beautiful result. So it just shows you, he didn't need that sharp Australian or USA light. Because the thing is, we get used to it. We get used to the flat light here in the UK. And we adjust accordingly, I think. We adjust our palette. In a sort of quiet tonal palette, which was interesting actually when we compared colours, and some of them were the same, but there were the interesting additions that catapulted Collie's bright light effect.
Mm-hmm.
But we have two of his paintings now hanging up on our walls to enjoy daily.
He showed me yours, the one that you guys traded. Yeah, he showed me the one you guys traded. That was a nice piece too. So that I get to see it.
Yeah, well, it was they are our light conditions, really, I guess.
But,
yeah. So that's great. I mean, it's lovely to, you've looked at these people on, for many years on Instagram and books and what have you. But it's marvelous to catch up and knock around together and talk see how what the thought train is like, and just look over the shoulder a bit and see how the strokes are applied. And they are different. They are different. I mean, Collie works on a very, very smooth surface. That wouldn't suit me. I need a bit more roughness, a bit more tooth. But it's horses for courses, you know.
Yeah. Sorry, David.
Yeah.
Actually, I am plotting.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of it, really.
Yeah. Actually, I can't fathom how you can work on the surface that you do. That's funny how it's night and day. But I am plotting a return trip, hopefully in 2025.
You did mention that. Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be terrific.
But this time I think I'll allow 7-10 days in the area, because I'd love to get to Robin Hood's Bay and back to Whitby.
Yes, Brunswick Bay.
So,
I've just come back from a little bit further down the coast at Flamborough, which are chalk cliffs. I was thinking of you, and it was brilliant weather again.
Right.
But these white chalk cliffs, they're a bit like Dover, you know?
Right. Oh, okay.
So you get the extreme light, pinky white light against the blue sea. I thought, God, Collie would love this. beautiful caves and caverns fabulous stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's just about 20 miles further south. So if you're coming for 7 or 10 days, we'd have to shoot down just a little further down the coast. So different, so amazingly different from the sort of shale cliffs that you experienced at Stays.
Yeah, actually, I think that's one of the great things with the British Isles, but even England being so small, sometimes you can drive 20, 30 minutes and you can get something completely different. Yeah, in Australia, we have to drive 2 or 3 days before we find something different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The whole thing is condensed. It's so condensed. And I'm going up in a few days' time up to the east coast of Scotland. I haven't been up there for a while. The Fifeshire coast, it's St. Abbs, and all these fabulous fishing villages, quite high up beyond Edinburgh. But it'd be very different, it'd be a very, very different landscape.
We are blessed
with that. And I think that's why we have so many plein air painters now, and that's grown. I'm sure it's the same in the US and Australia. There's such a resurgence in love of painting outside. They're springing up all over the country, and I know that you've got the West Coast and the sort of Midwest painters, and we've got the London painters and the Cornish groups, and they're all just loving it, and it just seems to me as though it's resurging from a bit of a doldrums in the sort of late 80s, 90s, but now everybody wants a piece of it. And I think it's to do with the life that we lead now, everybody wants to get away from all the grotty things of life and just disappear into, and paint with like-minded people. It's lovely. I think that interaction is great. And that little bit of edge, the competitive edge that sharpens up what you do,
I
think it's. I mean, I'm going out on Thursday with 17 people down in the Midlands, and all really, really good painters. So it'll be fabulous. Everybody paints differently, I think it's a healthy time actually. In an other words, unhealthy world that we live in.
My
philosophy on it.
Yeah, you might be onto that. What percentage of your Not percentage, but I mean roughly just meaning you paint from life and then you bring it back to the studio. Do you try to split it half and half, or is it just whenever you kind of...
I've just come back from a couple of weeks, and I've got down here, I've got half a dozen of 8, 10 12s, 14 10s oil paintings. And I shall twiddle around with those a bit, and then I shall... do some bigger piece. In fact, I've got one on the. It's a pity we're not zooming this, but I've got an 1824 from the Suffolk coast, which was a little watercolour I did on the spot, and then building that into quite a complex composition, which needs a studio setting to work out the drawing and alter the composition, adjust things. But you know what it's like when you're painting outside. You go firing into a subject, and you might be nearly right, but when you take it away, you think, a move 3 feet either way would have enhanced that composition a bit, so when you bring things in, it's time to just to sort of step back and look. But I think what you don't want to do is you want to retrieve or maintain the bravura strokes that happened on the day, those strokes which the ones that are okay, the swift and precise but raw and edgy. You don't want to lose those. So when you transfer, you want to try and maintain that. And also when you get the smaller paintings back, less is more. Just the sort of 10 minutes, half an hour. Just to correct drawing, just correct a bit of tonal, but don't lose the fire and the energy. Get them in a frame quickly if they've worked. That's how I see it in many ways. So don't lose the majesty and the magic of the essence of the day, and all the other things that happened in the day that enhance the painting progress.
Do I think you find you favour watercolour over oil at all?
When I don't think I do. I think I've done sort of 70-30 in favour of oils this year, I think. I think because we've had a poor summer, weather-wise, we haven't had the light as much. And I find that, you know, a tonal watercolour is fine, but you don't sort of get the edges. I look at the sort of work of, you know, Australian watercolour painters, American painters, Andy Evanson. You know, they work largely in fabulous sunlight, and you see the crisp edges. And when it's dead tonal, it's difficult, really. It's washes, sort of soft edge washes, but you feel the need to get an edgy approach. And I think with oils, I can get that sharp crispness perhaps quicker. I can work quicker, I think, in oils. I remember old Trevor Chamberlain used to say to me, you can work quicker in oils than you do in watercolours, and I'm the other way around, he says. I can speedily hit the watercolour, and I labour longer with the oils, but you seem to be able to bash them in double quick time. It's different psychologies, I think, and different mindsets. But yeah, kind of 30-70, I think, at the moment. Okay. But I've had summers, seasons, when it's been half and half, you know. And certainly if I go abroad, especially now with the, you know, the solvents and everything, I've had abroad trips when I've just taken watercolours. So you can't be tempted. You know, you've got your watercolours, you know, you sometimes you see a subject and say, God, I wish I got the oils. But I think the discipline, if you're stuck with one medium, good. All the better for it, I think. And I've had great holidays with just line and wash, you know, small scale, 14-10s, just to get everything in a suitcase, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the more of that you do, the better, really.
Yeah.
I remember, and of course, it's the drawing, the sketchbook stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That actually, my first three years of painting outdoors was only sketching, and at the time I thought, boy, this is kind of dragging on. I'm supposed to be an outdoor painter, but I didn't want to rush it. And I think in hindsight, it actually taught me a lot how to get that contrast. But I remember talking to Robert. Yeah. Do you know Robert Lovett, the late great watercolorist, oil painter? He just passed away.
Lovett. No, I don't know that name.
Okay. Oh. Yep. No.
Clearly, somebody who's meant something to you.
Actually, he just passed away sort of mid to late 80s, and he was kind of one of the lovely connections with the Streeton sort of painters, the early sort of impressionists, because he was kind of old enough to be stretched back and have met some of the, I'm not sure if he ever met Streeton, but he met definitely Robert Johnson, a lot of the artists that carry things on. But I remember asking him about some advice with, I said, I'd love to sort of get back to do a little bit of watercolour. And he said, oh, no, don't. You'll end up like me. You'll come up to the scene and you'll think to yourself, should I do oil? Should I do watercolour? And he said, it's like trying to choose between your mistresses. You can be torn. So with that advice, eventually I would love to do a little bit of sort of just watercolours on travel or gouache or maybe even acrylics. Yeah. But I do love the watercolour as a medium. It's something that I probably took to more naturally. But I'd love to sort of get some sort of stories, actually some of your absolute favourite places to paint, whether it's UK or Spain or is there some little sort of towns and villages that we've talked about, Staithes and Scotland?
Well, if you talk about watercolour, I had a painting trip out in the Sierra Nevada of mainland Spain.
Okay.
And that was the Boubion, which was whitewashed flat-topped houses in little villages on hillsides, and that gave you bluey shadows from trees onto the white walls, you know, and little groups of donkeys and things. Oh, wow. Donkeys housed in the houses, you know, with the heads pointing out. Just magical, timeless thing. Hilly villages, sort of wide streets, like kind of western streets almost. And I think they filmed quite a lot of Spanish westerns in that particular area. And it was the nearest I've got to the West, in a sense, in wide roads and dusty roads. But I only took watercolours, and everything was quite simple. The shapes of the buildings were simple. And you got the lovely cutting of hillsides into those white washed buildings. So that was a favourite place. It really was a magical place. But then I like places like Barcelona, right, where you've got the Las Ramblas and all the activity and the figures and the squares, and they're walking all the way down to the coast, they're skipping the tall ships there. So you've got everything within a mile of walking just down the markets. So, I mean, when you go to walk 1 mile and you've got markets, architecture, and straight down to the coast and fishing ports and all that stuff, bloody marvellous. Mm. And then, of course, I love the west coast of Cornwall.
Gotcha.
You know, where the Newlyn School, the Stays group people moved from Stays and the North Yorkshire coast down to the west coast, the southwest of Cornwall, because they felt uneasy, because they were fairly well to do and they lived with the squalor of the fisher folk in Whitby and Stays, and felt uncomfortable working there in a sense. Right. So they moved down and met Stanhope Forbes and all that group, you know, of that school of painting. So I love that. I like that. I like the cliffs. I like the coves. I mean, it's endless. And then, of course, on a pure rural tonal thing, it's the late English Lake District, which is completely different. It's all soft-edged mountains, streams. I've just been there recently as well and done a few things. I like to be in the Lake District in late winter, where spring is just burgeoning. And you still get a lot of waterfalls tracing their way down the hillside, you know. Tiny, tiny cottages, tiny farmsteads. The world's your oyster. I mean, it never ends.
Actually, I've got good friends that absolutely love the Lake District, and they've always told me, you've got to go and see it, paint it. But one of the eternal stresses I find is, especially more probably in Australia, is when you're looking for something to paint, you might be going to a new area. Do you ever have trouble sort of getting access? Because I always wished I had a artistic pass that was like a access all areas that you could just flash that.
In a way, it's worse now. That's one side of it. That's worse. Everybody's very territorial now, aren't they? Access, private, everything is gated. Private communities. I tend to try and get friendly with, especially coastal things. I try to move, if there's a harbour, I'll try and find the office. The harbour office. And almost 95% of the time they've said, just slip past that gate there, get yourself off, it's absolutely fine. And I've no problem. I think the worst thing is places like probably the best of the Lake District, which can be very territorial. You know, they're getting fed up with walkers, ramblers, and of course the sheep were, you know, dogs are off the leads and you know they worry about their stock. But I have a place I go to in Scotland, up in the west coast of Scotland, a place called Crinan. There's a most fabulous workshop there, right. A shipbuilder. And they're rebuilding the old puffer steamers. It's called a para-handy steamer. These grey and ironclad steamships. And they have them. There's only three or four, and they bring them up on the hard. And I came across them by chance. Mm-hmm. These enormous things, you know, proper shipping, proper ironclad shipping. And I went to the harbour chap there and said, "Do you think I can do this?" "Yeah, help yourself." He said, "Go on." He said, "Go where you want." He said, "Just watch the cranes when they come across." And so health and safety completely out of the window. Scotland's great like that.
Right.
But people are very, very conscious now of litigation,
yeah.
and particularly farms. Mm. I mean, I love old, as you know, I love old workshops and sheds and barns and all sorts of things. But they're worried now about the roofs coming in. 20, yeah. 30 years ago, you'd go anywhere. You'd go anywhere. I used to floor my way through, go anywhere and paint wonderful, hopefully paint fabulous barn interiors, which has always been my forte. You know, they don't sell, you know, I've got a shed full of them, but I just love doing them.
Yeah.
The painters paintings, aren't they? Some of these things.
So true.
I like that.
Well, you got to show it to the world. Let's see. Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of the internet. There's no, in galleries, they say, "Well, we want regional stuff." Well, the internet is open gate, right? So if you show it on the internet,
Instagram has proved to be fabulous, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
For exposing your work and seeing everybody else's work and commenting, and it brings it like a community, a family, isn't it? And then I think you learn so much from looking at other people's kind of half-finished things when they put process, you know, the process, not just the finished thing. Mm-hmm. It's like a massive learning curve for us all, really. That's what people say to me, you know, it's picked out a nuance of one of your paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed when you sent in the little image, it was more complete. And then you get the comment of, "Did you overdo it? Did you over egg it?"
Yeah.
You know, it's just business of when to stop, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
like
when to finish.
When you tell the student,
our old friend Ken Howard, who died very recently, he used to use the maxim: "If you take it home and finish it off, you will finish it off."
That's a true statement.
Yeah,
very true.
Which is interesting. Interesting with outdoor paintings. When you paint outdoors, I'm sure you go through this too. And like, "Oh man, this is great!" Like, and you bring it home, it's like something happened between the destination and your home.
Yeah.
And you look at it like, "This is horrible." but then it's really not.
I know.
Time. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Don't look at your painting. Turn them to the wall.
Yep.
And you know, 3 or 4 days. Think. I don't know. It's mindset or.
I don't know. It's the light. Because the light was so beautiful. I think outside, the painting even looked better.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. It's a weird thing, isn't it? That it's a strange thing. And the thing you think, "Oh, it's really, really pleased with that," and then, no, it isn't. It hasn't worked. You know, it stack up,
yeah.
And that's kind of one of the big sort of downers, isn't it? The disappointment, you know. But you need a broad back for this game. You know, people think, "Oh, that must be a nice hobby you've got there." It's very well, isn't it? It's the hardest job on earth.